WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Henry. Good morning. It's the 29th of July, 2020. For the first half of the show, I'm going to play The Saint, starring Vincent Price. It's titled The Connolly Silver Mine. I may or may not have played this previously, maybe a year and a half ago if I had. I just know I had this kind of in my cache. The original air date of this was the 31st of July, 1949.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime is now transcribed for radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
Anything wrong, Captain?
Nothing serious, Mr. Templer. Just coming down here for a check. Go on just as soon as we can.
Oh, and where is here?
Headstone, New Mexico. Used to be a big silver mining town, but now it's just another little town, I guess. Although I did notice there's a carnival playing over on the edge of this emergency landing strip.
Well, how long are we to enjoy the hospitality of Headstone?
Oh, 2 or 3 hours. Long enough to see the town, have dinner if you like. Sorry to delay you, sir.
Oh, it's all right, Captain. I'm seldom bored in a strange town.
Well, you better go back and fasten your seatbelt, Mr. Templer. We're coming down now.
Right, I'll see you later.
Well, good evening, Saint.
You know me? Yet I don't seem to recall your face.
Harry Kelly, and you don't recall my face because we've never met, but I've seen many pictures of you, and so I recognized you immediately.
Well, that's very flattering. Tell me, Mr. Kelly, how can I get into town?
You can find a cab on the other side of the carnival. Planning on staying long?
Not at all. Should I?
On the contrary, I was just going to suggest that I doubt if Headstone would welcome the presence of the Saint. Just a friendly remark, you understand.
Oh, naturally. And if I may be permitted a friendly question, why are you telling me this?
Just an interest in the continued health of my fellow human. If you have any trouble in town, look me up. Anyone can tell you where to find me.
I look, the big show is just about to start. See little Fatima, the girl who shakes and shivers like a bowl full of jelly. Only $1, 10 cents, the tenth part of a dollar. Hurry, 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 step right up.
There must be a home for you. I read the past, the present, and the future. Learn your fortune, young man.
I already know it, Grandmother. I'm destined to meet a tall, dark, and beautiful woman. I'll settle for nothing less.
I see strange lines on your face, young man.
Huh?
I will tell your fortune without charge. Give me your hand. I see danger. Beware of a blonde young woman. She will bring you death.
There are worse ways of dying, Grandmother.
I see danger. Much danger for one with a halo about his head. Blood and death. Unless he travels, I see...
I think I'm beginning to get the idea. You might tell your crystal ball that I'm beginning to be interested. Goodbye, Grandmother, and may the saints bless you.
Taxi, mister?
Oh, thank you. Say, do you suppose you can drive me somewhere that serves a good dinner?
Sure.
Silver Dollar Hotel.
Oh, fine.
You know, I was just sitting there communing with nature about how many guys there are who blow their wad to watch some dame do a hula but won't spend a dime on a hack.
Do I detect a touch of Brooklyn?
How could you miss? That's me, chum. Ziggy from Flatbush. I used to drive a hack in Brooklyn. Now I own the only hack in Headstone. It's life, huh? You know, I ain't seen a Brooklyn Bridge for 10 years since I come out here for my health. Like I always say, it's a smart man who knows when it's healthy to get out of town.
Meaning what?
Does everything have to mean something? Me, I mind my own business. I stay healthy. That's why I'm living in Headstone instead of under one.
I see. But if you didn't mind your own business, I suppose you'd give me some advice about leaving Headstone. Is that it?
No advice, Mac. That's part of minding my own business. Headstone is a great place for strangers to visit. If they paid up their insurance.
Here you are, waiter. Very nice dinner. My check, please. No, thank you. Keep the change.
Hello.
Well, this is a surprising hotel. First a beautiful dinner, and then an even more beautiful blonde.
May I sit down?
Oh, by all means, Miss...
Betty Conley. You're Simon Templer?
I should have worn my dark glasses. But now that the truth is out, you might as well call me Simon.
All right, Simon.
Now, how did you know who I am? Now, don't tell me that you were just passing and recognized me.
Why, Ziggy told me that you were here. He owns and drives the taxi here in Headstone.
I know I shouldn't look a gift blonde in the hair, but why did Ziggy tell you I was in here?
Well, Ziggy knows that I need help, and he thought, well, that is, since you're the saint, you might help me.
Well, I have been known to help beautiful blondes on occasion. But tell me why you should need help, Betty.
Someone's been trying to kill me.
Oh, there should be a law against that. Are you sure?
I've been shot at twice, and everybody here has been very unfriendly, except Ziggy and a man named Harry Kelly.
I've noticed the unfriendliness in this town, but being unfriendly towards you is obviously an indication of insanity.
Oh, please don't joke about it. I'm frightened.
All right, my dear. Now tell me about it.
Well, my father was known as Silver Slim Conley. He lived here for years. But he sent me east to school when I was very young, and I didn't come back here until recently. My father died about a month ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was broke, and all he left me was his old silver mine. He called it the Betty Mine, after me.
And I take it somebody wants the mine.
No, the mine is completely worthless. There hasn't been any silver in it for years.
But, my dear, you were shot at twice. Have you any idea who did the shooting?
No. But it might be the same man who told me to get out of town.
Oh, who?
Mike McCarthy. Ziggy says he's an eastern gangster who's been living out here for several months. Will you help me, Mr. Simon?
Well, I've never been able to say no to a pretty girl. You mentioned a man named Harry Kelly before. Just who is he?
He knew my father. He's been very friendly to me, although he thought I ought to leave town, too.
I've met Mr. Kelly, and he intrigues me very much. I think we'll go see him.
All right. Just a minute. There was some red dust on your coat.
Oh, thank you. Ziggy apparently doesn't get enough passengers to keep his cab dusted. Did you say Ziggy was parked outside in his chariot?
Mm-hmm. He was when I came in. Oh, there he is.
Yes, looking exactly as if he were back in Brooklyn. Hey, Ziggy!
Oh, so she found you, huh?
Thanks to your bird dogging, which I must admit in this case has done much to overcome any natural prejudice against cab drivers that I might have. Say, do you know where Harry Kelly lives?
Sure.
And let's go then. Huh? Hey, don't you ever clean out this hack? What's all this dust?
Well, who knows? Maybe it was that redhead that hired me yesterday. So she had dandruff.
Ziggy, you missed your calling. You're as funny as an undertaker. Well, now, Ziggy, I don't suppose you'd care to tell me why you warned me to get out of Headstone.
Got me all wrong, Saint. I wasn't warning you. I was just talking about myself.
And I don't suppose you'd care to tell me why somebody took pot shots at Miss Connolly here and told her to get out of town, too.
Me, I don't know nothing. Like I was telling you, Saint, I mind my own business. Maybe you stay ignorant that way, but it's healthier, and I like it like that.
Well, in that case, why did you send Miss Connolly in to see me?
Well, like you can see, she's a pretty little pigeon. She needs to know some guy will help her. Now, it ain't no secret that the saint goes around mixing in other people's business, so I tell her to see you.
And who told you I was the saint?
I got eyes in my head, ain't I? Like I said, I used to hack in Brooklyn. I got around.
What about this Mike McCart?
Strictly smart money, saint.
Huh?
A lot of guys have crossed his path once, if you get what I mean.
What about Harry Kelly?
Local stuff. A nice schmo, but no more.
You're doing all right for a guy that doesn't know anything.
You got me wrong, pal. Ziggy, he looks people over, but he don't see nothing except one guy is tough, another guy is a schmo, and maybe another guy is too nosy.
I really don't think we should try to involve Ziggy, Simon. He's been very nice as it is.
Yeah, she's got something, pal. I ain't really equipped for it, because the way you're headed, only a saint could feel at home. Saint. Kelly lives on the first floor in the rear.
Oh, thanks. Wait for us, Ziggy. We've got a couple of other calls to make after this.
Don't worry, I'll wait. If you get in any trouble, just yell. Then I'll drive over and tell the sheriff I heard somebody yell for help.
Oh, thanks, pal. Come on, Betty. Well, I hope our friend is in and that he talks.
Yeah. Strange. Harry telling you to come and see him if you had any trouble. If he had any connection with me, then why hasn't he said something to me?
Well, he sounded to me like a cautious man. Maybe he did know something, but didn't want to say anything unless he felt sure something was going to be done. Well, we'll soon know.
Yes, who is it?
Simon Templer.
Oh, the saint. Just a minute.
Those shots were in that room.
This is no time for conversation, darling. We're going in.
Oh, but...
Like this.
Kelly!
Oh, Simon...
Kelly. Kelly, this is Simon Templer.
Templer. Saint?
Yes, Kelly, the saint. Who shot you?
The window. The saint. The mine. Saint.
Kelly. Well, Betty, he isn't going to tell us anything now. This killer did a very thorough job. Window open. Must have shot from here. There's a shell on the fireplace.
But what was he saying?
Sounded like sin. Come on, Betty. We're going to spread a little saintliness. And I think I know where to begin. Ziggy, didn't you hear anything?
Well, I noticed some noise, but like I thought...
I know. You mind your own business.
Are we going to the sheriff's, Simon?
No, not yet. Ziggy, who's the assayer in this town?
Old man Matthews. The office is closed now, but he lives right ahead there. That big white house.
Okay, stop there.
But Simon...
I'd like to satisfy a little curiosity about that mine of yours. I'll be right back. You stay in here, Betty.
What do you want?
Mr. Matthews.
Who else should be here? It's my house, ain't it? What do you want?
My name is Simon Templer. I wanted to ask you if you know the Connolly Silver Mine.
I know every mine within 200 miles of here, young fella. Hey, ain't that Betty Connolly sitting up there in that taxi?
Yes.
Then why can't she tell you about the mine? She owns it.
Well, she has told me, but I just wanted to check about the possibility of a mistake. How much silver would you say there was in the Connolly mine?
About enough to put in your eye and still leave room for your finger.
Couldn't there be a hidden vein in it?
Nope. There ain't been enough silver around here to make a dime for years and years.
Could there be anything else of value in it?
Mud and water, if you call that valuable.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure. Young fella, I've been here man and boy for 70 years, and I ain't got no time to stand around answering darn fool questions. Goodbye.
Well, goodbye. Betty, you may be right. Old man Matthew says the mine is worthless, too. So, Ziggy, take us to see Mike McCarthy.
Are you sure you want to go there, Sam? If I was you, I'd get on that plane. It's leaving pretty soon.
No, Ziggy, I've decided not to leave Headstone just yet. Later, you can drive me over to Albuquerque, and I'll take the chief the rest of the way.
Okay, Chum, it's your funeral.
Please be careful.
Don't you worry, Betty. The Halo Wearers Benevolent Association would be very upset if anything happened to me. I'll be right up.
Yeah?
I'm looking for Mike McCarthy.
Well, you found him.
It's my Boy Scout training. It never fails. My name is Simon Templar.
The Saint?
I've been known by that name.
So what?
That's a very interesting question. I must try to think of an answer sometime. Meanwhile, I thought you might like to know that I heartily disapprove of your telling a certain Miss Betty Connolly that she ought to leave town.
What's the girl to you?
That's my business.
I could make it mine. And if I do, your halo's going to slip down and start choking you.
I thought bullets were more in your line.
Meaning what?
Meaning the shots fired at Miss Connolly in a little gunning job only a few minutes ago.
I didn't do any gunning. But I'm liable to if you don't beat it.
You sound so sure of yourself, Michael.
That's because I got more in my hand than an itching palm.
That's a very pretty gun, Mike. But I'm very much afraid that nothing will satisfy my curiosity short of knowing why you want to get Miss Connolly out of town.
I got answers for nosy guys. Six of them. I just stand right there. Stay away from that desk, Saint, or
don't worry, Mike. I have no interest in the desk at all. But I do have an interest in Miss Connolly. Now, Michael, I'll bid you adieu.
What happened, Simon?
Oh, not much, I'm afraid. The conversation was just getting interesting when Mike had a sudden attack of dropsy.
That's funny. I never heard of him being sick.
Oh, that's because you mind your own business, Ziggy, like you told me. Betty, where is that silver mine of yours?
About 2 miles out of town.
Is any place in town where we can rent a car?
Well, why, I have a car. Why?
I feel a prospecting urge coming over me. Ziggy, take us to Miss Connolly's car, and then we can dispense with your valuable services.
What's wrong with my care?
Nothing, Ziggy. It's just that I don't like people looking over my shoulder, especially when I visit a lonely mine in the company of a beautiful girl.
Well, here's the Betty mine, although I don't know why you want to see it.
Frankly, I don't know either. But as long as I'm here, I might as well take the 40-cent tour.
Certainly, sir. Right this way. This old cable car goes down into the mine. All we have to do is stand on the platform and pull the cable. It works with balanced weight.
Clever, these 49ers. How far down?
On the 40-cent tour, we give the exact distance. 354 feet, 6 inches.
Thank you. And, thank you for having electric lights in a mine that hasn't been worked for years.
Oh, the mine has its own battery. See? Here's a bulb on the car. Shall we go down?
What are we waiting for? Let's go. Maybe the lights will go out.
Just hold it like that. I've been waiting for you two.
Well, Michael McCarthy, I was wondering if we were going to have your company.
And this time, wise guy, don't try anything.
Don't tell me, Michael, that you're going prospecting with us.
I'm riding down with you. But I'm coming back alone. Start the car down, Saint, but don't try no tricks.
You have a suspicious mind, Mike. Well, here we go. Call out your floors, please. Mezzanine, ladies' underwear, galoshes, and accessories.
You'll be singing a different tune pretty soon, Saint. You both had your chance to leave town your way. Now you're going to leave my way.
Oh, Simon, I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be, Betty. This is my first ride on an open cable car.
It'll be your last.
I wouldn't be too sure. Unless that cable breaks before we get to the bottom.
What are you talking about?
Sucker! It's a little crowded here for a 1-2, so I guess a 1.5 will have to do.
Oh, Simon. How terrible.
There now, Betty. It's all right.
Oh, Simon, it could have been you. He almost knocked you off the platform, too.
Yeah, with the padded shoulders in my coat, I felt them hit the side.
Oh, look at your shoulders. They're covered with dirt from the sides of the shaft.
Yeah. Huh. It's red dirt. Wait a minute. Well, we can go back up, Betty. Mike doesn't need our help, and I don't need anybody to answer questions anymore.
Simon, I'll never understand you. Why did you look at the dirt on your coat and say you didn't need any more questions?
Because that dirt was red sulfide, Betty. And it explains why Mike was so anxious to run you out of town.
Well, I don't see how. Red sulfide is used in paint, but that doesn't make it valuable.
Red sulfide is also cinnabar ore, from which we get mercury, and that is pretty valuable. Evidently, your mine is rich in cinnabar, so it's worth a lot of money, Betty.
Oh, then that was what Kelly was trying to tell us when he said sin.
Yes, he was trying to say cinnabar.
How can I ever thank you, Simon?
Well, I have a couple of ideas on the subject. Oh, but now people would say I was chasing you for your money. So, I guess you can just see me off on the train. We'll stop in town and have Ziggy drive us to Albuquerque.
Oh, but I'll drive you.
Now, I insist on taking a cab. I don't want you coming back alone. I may want to change my mind about fortune hunting.
Like I said, Saint, I'm glad to see you leaving. This town is just funny about strangers, but hadn't you ought to take Miss Connolly, would you?
But she doesn't have to go now, Ziggy, and besides, she's rich.
What?
Yes, Ziggy, we found out that Dad's mine is valuable after all.
You mean you found silver in it?
No, mercury.
Oh, the stuff they put in the thermometer?
That's the stuff, Ziggy. But it's used for a lot of other things, particularly in wartime, and it's worth a lot of money.
Well, what do you know? So that's why Mike was trying to make you leave.
That's it.
Well, did you stop and tell the sheriff?
We didn't have time, but I'll see him when we go back.
Oh, that's pretty nice for you, ain't it, buddy? Oh, here we are. Just in time, too. The chief's in already.
Very nice timing, Ziggy. Thanks, Betty, for keeping my forced visit to Headstone from being dull.
Oh, Simon, well, why don't you stay in Headstone? I won't know how to run the mine or what to do with the money or anything.
You'll learn, Betty. You know what to do when you get back to town?
Yes, but... Well, will the sheriff believe me? I mean, about Mike McCarthy killing Harry Kelly.
I don't think he will, since Mike didn't kill Kelly.
But
Kelly was shot with an automatic. He ejected a shell on the fireplace, remember? But Mike McCarthy carried a revolver. You saw it.
Yes, but will the sheriff...
Oh, the sheriff will believe when you show him that the gun that killed Kelly is in Ziggy's pocket.
What? What are you talking about?
You knew about the cinnabar ore in the mine. You carried some of it away to be tested in your cab. And there was red dust in it, which you tried to explain with a corny gag.
You're crazy.
Harry Kelly had an idea what was going on, so you slipped around to the back while we were at the front door and killed him.
All right, wise guy, you're so smart. What about Mike?
Mike was working for you.
But Simon, Ziggy told me that you were in town.
Sure, he couldn't be sure that I wasn't here to break up his little scheme, so the smartest thing to do was to get us together so he could watch both of us. He thought I would use his cab, as I did, and it would be easy. But he slipped up when he sent Mike out to the mine ahead of us. Ziggy was the only one who knew where we were going.
Okay, pal, you asked for it.
This time, sweetheart! Like you said, pal, you should have followed your own advice about minding your own business.
What?
Well, he's all yours, Betty. The gun that killed Kelly is now on the seat beside him. All you have to do is turn the body and the gun over to the sheriff, and from there on in, he'll mind Ziggy's business for him.
But, son...
Don't worry, Betty. I'll stop back someday to make sure that Venus is in conjunction with Mercury.
You have just heard another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, how many times there have been men just like Ziggy led into crime by insatiable greed, forgetting the simplest truth so aptly phrased by John Dryden. Murder may pass unpunished for a time, but tardy justice will o'ertake the crime. This is Vincent Price extending a personal invitation to all of you to join us again next week at this same time for another adventure of The Saint. Good night.
Tonight's script of The Saint was written by Michael Cramoy. Our cast included Harry Bartell, Barney Phillips, Colleen Collins, Fred Howard, and Tony Barrett. The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint is a James L. Sapir Agency production and was transcribed and directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Don't forget that The Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That was The Saint, starring Vincent Price. The title of that episode was The Connolly Silver Mine, with an original air date of the 31st of July, 1949. I just kind of threw that into the show. I had that in my cachet, but I had other plans for this week's show, but they fell through, so I'm going to try next week for that. So this was just kind of a filler piece. Now we have to fulfill an FCC obligation.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. For the second half of the program, I'm going to feature Jack Webb's Dragnet. This is a carryover from last week where I featured the writing of Frank Burt, who wrote and created and wrote The Six Shooter. He would go on in 1958 to be part of the writing staff of the television series Dragnet. This episode is going to be titled The Big Guilt, with an original air date of the 23rd of November, 1952. It features Carolyn Jones, who would portray Morticia Adams in television's Adams Family. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. You get a call that the body of a man has been found in an alley. He's been strangled with his own necktie. The body has been robbed. There's no lead to the killer. Your job, find him. Thousands are changing to Chesterfield, both regular and king size, because Chesterfield is the first and only cigarette to give you premium quality in both sizes.
That means king-size Chesterfield contains tobaccos of better quality and higher price than any other king-size cigarette.
It's the same fine tobacco as in regular Chesterfield, and there's enough to give you more than a one-fifth longer smoke. Yes, more than a fifth longer smoke from king-size Chesterfield.
So remember, Chesterfield is the only cigarette to give you premium quality in both regular and king size.
Buy them either way you like them. Premium quality Chesterfield, and much milder.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime.
For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Sunday, February 10th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. We'd gotten the call at 8:36 a.m., and it was 8:49 a.m. when we got to the corner of 18th and Winfield, the back alley.
Must be it there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's Harper.
Sergeant, back here.
Hi, Friday, Smith.
Harper,
hi.
Where is he?
Back here.
Who found him?
The fella gives his name as Alexander Jones.
Where's he now?
Al's got him out in the car. Figured you'd want to talk to him. Pretty bad off.
Yeah.
Must have had himself a real time last night. He's seeing things this morning. We picked him up just coming out of the alley. Stopped to talk to him. It looked like he was having a real rough time.
Jones, huh?
Yeah, probably not his real name. I've seen him around here before. There's the body.
Strangled.
Yeah, ambulance is here. Here's a slip. He was DOA.
Yeah. See how the tie's pulled up out of the shirt?
Looks like he was robbed. Pockets all turned inside out.
Uh-huh. You want to call the crime lab, Frank?
Yeah.
Found a couple of footprints over here in the gutter. Heel indentation looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Put this box over them. I don't know if they'll mean anything. Thought I'd better keep them for you, though.
Mm-hmm. It's like the body was dragged back here, doesn't it? Marks in the dirt.
Yeah.
How about the neighborhood, Harper? Anybody around here see anything?
Well, I don't know. There wasn't anybody on the streets when we picked up this Jones guy. Haven't had a chance to canvass the area. Didn't want to leave here, you know.
Yeah. Well, we better call the office, have them send out a couple of men.
Call Lee. He'll be right out. Got him at home. He's sound asleep. Said he'd call the lab and have Alan bring the stuff out and Lee'd come right here.
How about the coroner?
He's on his way.
Well, I want to call the office, Frank, and get some help checking the stores around, see if anybody heard anything.
I used the phone in the cigar store on the corner. Guy in there said he opened up about 7:15. Said he didn't know anything about it. Store's back door is right there. See the one with the cigar posters on it?
Yeah. All right, come on. I'll call in and then we can check some of the other places, huh?
All right.
I'll wait here, Sergeant, until the rest of them come.
Fine, thanks, Harper. We'll be in the stores around the street side there.
Okay.
Let us know when Lee gets here, will you?
Yeah. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I don't know. The way he's dressed there, good clothes, looked like he had money. Doesn't figure, does it?
Yeah.
What was he doing down here? A.M. I called the office and two teams of men were sent out to help us canvass the area. Frank and I checked with the owner of a liquor store who was getting ready to open for business. He told us that he'd come in early that morning to clean up his store and that he'd taken a load of trash out into the alley at about 8:25 a.m., but at that time he hadn't seen the body. He went on to say, however, that it was possible that it might have been there and he just didn't notice it. 9:26 a.m., Sergeant Jay Allen and Lieutenant Lee Jones from the crime lab arrived and began collecting the physical evidence. The body and the surrounding area were photographed. Photographs were taken of the footprints that Officer Harper had found. They were compared with the shoes worn by the victim, but they didn't match. The coroner went through the dead man's pockets, but found nothing. Everything had been removed, all his personal effects, if any. The crew from the crime lab went through the alley and found a wallet behind the garbage cans at the rear of the liquor store. There was no money in it, but other papers hadn't been disturbed. Driver's license, Social Security card, and several business cards in the wallet bore the name of Arthur McKinley. The description on the license matched that of the victim. Comparison of the thumbprint on the driver's license with those taken from the body matched. McKinley's home address was listed as 9722 Willetta Street in Hollywood. The coroner removed the body. 10:52 a.m., Frank and I talked to Alex Jones, the man who had been in the alley where the body had been found. We had him take everything out of his pockets.
I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't kill anybody.
We didn't say you did. All we want to know is what were you doing in that alley?
I went there to get away.
From what?
People. They're no good. None of them. No good.
You got a job?
Yeah, I work.
What do you do?
Wash dishes sometimes.
Pearl diver?
No, sir. No pearl diver. I'm a bartender. I don't feel so good. You got anything to drink around here?
You know better than that, don't you?
Well, I didn't mean booze. Something cold. Feels like somebody's closed a valve in my head. Feels like it's going to blow apart. Isn't there something, anything, as long as it's cold?
How about a Coke?
Yeah, be fine.
I'll get it for you. Want one, Joe?
No, thanks.
Mind if I go with you? Kind of stuffy in here.
All right, come on. We'll all walk down. You ever been arrested, Alex?
Yeah. A couple of times. Picked me up for being drunk.
What's your real name, Alex?
Stafford. Alex Stafford, that's the truth.
Where are you from?
Kansas.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing out here?
Figured that when I got out of the service, I'd come out here and go to work.
Yeah?
Got out here, spent a couple of days looking for a job, had my mustering out pay about $400. Figured I didn't have to go to work right away.
Uh-huh. Right, just a second. All right, here you go.
Thanks.
You want one, Frank?
No, thanks. I want to check R&I and see if they finished the run on McKinley yet.
Sure cold. Tastes good. Feel better.
That's fine. All right, let's go. Frank, see you back at the interrogation room.
Okay, Joe.
Want to stop at the office, give the coroner's office a call?
Yeah.
Like I was telling you, I figured that I didn't have to come up with a job right away, so I started to see the town. You know, try to find a place to work where I could maybe do some good.
Right.
Where I could do some good. Where the tips would be good, you know, nice people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went around to the bars and talked to the bartenders, checking around. Each of the places I'd have a drink, you know, just to be sociable.
Yeah.
It wasn't long before my dough was gone. I was flat broke, kicked out of my room. We can't blame the landlady. She carried me for a couple of months. Finally said I had to go.
All right, go ahead. What'd you mean when you said that you were running away from people?
I got a job yesterday, washing dishes in a restaurant down on Spring. I worked like a dog. When I left last night, they paid me. I guess the boss knew I didn't have any money, no place to sleep.
Yeah.
I started to find a bed. Then I got to thinking that a drink might make me sleep better. So I stopped at a bar and had a couple. I had a couple more. I guess I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And anyway, I went into the alley. That one where you found the dead man, I sat down and I went to sleep again. When I woke up, I was walking out when a cop in a car stopped me.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I didn't know the man was in there. Honest, I didn't. Now, you gotta believe me, because somebody's gotta believe me. I didn't know he was there.
Anything?
Not on McKinley. Found Alex, reckon.
Yeah.
Like you said, a couple of drunk arrests, that's all.
I told you. Didn't I tell you that, huh? I got nothing to hide. I didn't even know the man was there.
All right, take it easy. Anything from the coroner?
Yeah, Joe, I called. Fixes the time of death at about 11:30 last night. Body hasn't been posted yet.
All right. You prove where you were at 11:30 last night, can you, Alex?
I don't know. I was someplace.
Yeah, we know that, but where?
Well, I got to think. 11:30. I was still working. I was washing dishes in the place over on Spring.
You can prove that, can you?
Yeah, sure. The boss, he'll tell you. He saw me. I didn't leave until 12. That's when I left the place. 12 o'clock, he'll tell you. 12 midnight.
All right, Alex.
Can I go now?
Well, we got to put in a call first. Maybe it might be better if we held you over a little while.
Why? I haven't done anything.
Well, it's against the law to be drunk on the streets. You know that, Alex.
Yeah, I guess I do. You're going to put me in jail, huh?
No, we're going to have to book you. The judge will decide where you're going to go. Probably be the county work farm.
Yeah. Well, it's probably better that way. Give me a chance to get off the booze. Boy, I had it this time. Seeing those things. Just one thing, Sergeant?
Yeah?
I want to make sure you understand that you really believe me.
What's that, Alex?
I'm not a dishwasher. I'm a bartender.
...12:18 p.m. We had Alex Stafford booked at the main jail on a charge of violation of 4127 LAMC, drunk. We called the place where he'd been employed and found that he'd been telling the truth about the time he had left the restaurant on Spring Street. 1:36 p.m. We drove out to McKinley's home in Hollywood. It was a small stucco cottage set into the side of a hill. In front of the house, there was a boy's bicycle and a smaller child's wagon. Frank rang the bell and we waited.
Yes?
Ms. McKinley?
Yes, that's right. What do you want?
Police officers, ma'am. We'd like to talk to you.
It's about Arthur, isn't it? Isn't it?
It might be better if we talked inside, Mrs. McKinley.
All right. Come on in. You have to excuse the way the house looks. I haven't felt like cleaning it up. I've been so worried about Arthur.
That's quite all right, ma'am.
Now, what is it you want to tell me about him? He's dead, isn't he? You don't have to lie about it. I know he's dead. I spent the whole night thinking about it. You can probably tell I haven't gotten any sleep. I don't want you to lie about it. I want the truth. Arthur's dead, isn't he?
Yes, ma'am, he is.
I'll have to sit down.
Was there something we can get for you, Miss McKinley? Water, something like that?
No, nothing.
Why do you say you knew your husband was dead, ma'am?
I just knew it, that's all. I can't tell you how. I can't put it into words, but I just knew it, that's all. When he called last night, I knew.
What time was that, ma'am?
About 6:30. He said he was just leaving the shop and that he was on his way home. It was his birthday. He's going to stop and get some beer and a couple of bottles of bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
We're having some people in. He said he was going to stop for some things. Then he said he'd be right home.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, the children waited up for him till 10 o'clock. That's way past their bedtime. I let them wait up. They had some presents they wanted to give their father. Arthur Jr. had made a wallet in handcraft class at school, all tooled and carved and everything. It's on the table there.
Mm-hmm.
Little Burl got him an ashtray. She picked it out by herself. It's on the table, too. Guess maybe you'll never get it now.
I wonder if we could call your family doctor, ma'am. You don't look like you're well.
No. I just can't believe it yet. But I know it's true. That's funny, isn't it? I know it's true, but I don't believe it. I know it's true, and I don't believe it. How did it happen? Was it an accident in the car?
No, ma'am. He was murdered.
Arthur. Arthur, he was murdered?
That's right, Miss McKinley.
Miss McKinley. There's no Mr. McKinley anymore. He was murdered.
I think maybe you better let us call a doctor for you, ma'am, get you something.
No, there's nothing a doctor can do. Nothing anybody can do. Nothing. Who did it, you know? You know who killed him?
No, ma'am, we don't, not yet.
You said your husband called you from the shop, ma'am. What shop would that be?
That's a florist shop. Our shop. We owned it. He called me from there about 6:30 and said he'd be home. That he was going to stop for some things and then he'd be home. But he wasn't. I knew it. I knew it all night. I thought of what I'd say, what I'd do, how I'd feel, but now none of it fits. None of it seems to matter. Nothing matters much. Nothing. He said he was coming right home.
Who's your family doctor, ma'am?
What'd you say?
Your family doctor, ma'am. Who is he?
Dr. Simpkins in Hollywood. Dr. Simpkins, Hollywood, 27083.
You want to call him?
Yeah.
He said he was going to pick up a few things and come right home. My husband, Arthur McKinley. You know that, do you?
Ma'am?
There is no Mr. McKinley anymore, is there?
We called the McKinley family doctor. He arrived and gave Mrs. McKinley a sedative. Frank and I talked to her before it took effect. We asked her about her husband's friends, his business associates. She could give us no new leads. She told us that her husband usually brought the weekend receipts from the store home with him on Sunday night so that he could make out the deposit slip for the bank. She said that he usually had about $300 to $400 on Sunday night. She gave us the name of the liquor store where he did business. 2:47 p.m., Frank and I drove out to the store.
Gentlemen, what can I do for you?
Mr. Kennedy?
Night.
Police officer, Mr. Kennedy. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure, anything to help the police. Nothing that I've done, is it?
No, sir. It's about Arthur McKinley.
He get home last night? His wife called, seemed pretty upset. Nothing wrong, is it?
Was Mr. McKinley in here last night, sir?
Yeah, he was. Let's see, I guess it's about 6:45. Come in, got a case of beer, a couple of bottles of bourbon.
Uh-huh. Was there anybody with him when he came in?
No, there wasn't.
Did he seem all right to you when he was here?
What do you mean?
Well, was he in good spirits? Did he act like anything was wrong?
No, of course that don't mean anything.
Sir?
Well, even if there was anything wrong with Arthur, you'd never know it. Always laughing, always had a joke. He had a great one last night, real funny.
Yeah?
He told the one about the two musicians that were walking down the railroad track, and one of them said to the other, "Boy, this is the longest stairway I ever been down."
Well, yes, sir.
And then the other musician said, "I don't mind that, but these low banisters are killing me." Low banisters. Say, what's this all about, anyway? Something happened to Arthur?
He's been murdered, Mr. Kennedy.
Arthur? Arthur McKinley? You sure?
Yes, sir. We're sure.
How about that? Only last night I saw him laughing away. He was killed. You know who did it?
No, sir, not yet.
How about that? I bet his wife's pretty upset.
Do you know anyone who might want to kill him?
No, not Arthur.
Anybody in the neighborhood he had quarrels with? Any disagreements?
No, not I can think of.
Well, has there been anybody new, anybody you don't know hanging around the neighborhood lately? Anybody who could have known about McKinley's carrying that money around with him?
Well, let me think. Yeah, come to think about it, there is a fella. Seen him around the last couple of days. Matter of fact, I saw him last night when I helped Arthur carry the beer out to the car. Sure, that's where I saw him.
Sir?
He was in the car with Arthur.
February 10th, 3:50 p.m. We continued to question John Kennedy. He told us that when Arthur McKinley had left the liquor store, he had carried a case of beer out to the car for him. Kennedy said there was a man waiting in the car. The liquor store owner told us that he had seen the man in the neighborhood on several previous occasions, that the man had talked to most of the shopkeepers in the vicinity asking for odd jobs. Kennedy went on to say that he had hired him himself once to wash the front windows of the store. He gave us a complete description and Frank called it into the office. A local and an APB were gotten out on him. Kennedy was unable to give us his name or tell us where the suspect might live. He agreed to go downtown to the city hall and look through the mug books for us. He called his brother down to take charge of the store, and as soon as he arrived, Kennedy was taken down to the office. 5:17 p.m. We drove back to the McKinley home. Mrs. McKinley had recovered from the initial shock of finding out that her husband was dead. We asked her if she knew where her husband's car was, and she told us that as far as she knew, he had driven it the night before and that she hadn't seen it since. She gave us the description and license number, and we called it into the office. A broadcast was gotten out on it. We asked Mrs. McKinley to go with us to her husband's store, and she agreed. On a table in back of the store, we found two empty beer bottles and a couple of glasses. Leighton Prince was called, and they came out and lifted two sets of fingerprints from the bottles and the glasses. Crime Lab came out and photographed the place. There was no sign of a struggle, but there was evidence that there had been a party there the night before. We drove Mrs. McKinley back to her home, and at 8:13 p.m., Frank and I checked back into the city hall.
Long day, huh, Joe?
Yeah, I'm getting a little tired. What do you want to eat tonight?
Doesn't make any difference. Go ahead.
Thanks. I get it. Homicide, Friday. Yeti. Mm-hmm. They did, huh? Who? Oh, let me get that. Yeah, I got it. Okay, thanks, Dean. Yeah, you bet. Good night. It was Bergman. I made the prints on that bottle and glass.
Yeah?
A fellow named Fred Girard did time for armed robbery.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
We like to give you the facts about Chesterfield so you can be your own judge.
Chesterfield is the first and only cigarette to give you premium quality in both regular and king size.
Chesterfield is the first and only cigarette to tell you what it's made of. The world's best tobaccos, kept tasty and fresh by pure and costly moistening agents. The best that money can buy. And Chesterfield cigarette paper is of the highest purity.
Now, Chesterfield is the first and only cigarette to present this scientific evidence on the effects of smoking.
A medical specialist is making regular bi-monthly examinations of a group of people from various walks of life. 45% of this group have smoked Chesterfields for an average of 10 years. He reports that he observed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfield. Either way you like them, regular or king size, you'll find premium quality Chesterfields much milder.
Sunday, February 10th, 8:30 p.m. Frank and I pulled a package on Fred Girard. He'd been arrested in 1942 on a charge of violation of 211 PC. He'd been convicted and had served 5 years in the penitentiary at San Quentin. We checked back with John Kennedy, the man who had seen Arthur McKinley leave the liquor store in the company of the man we figured to be the murderer. When we entered the mug room, he was talking to Sergeants Joe LaMonica and Danny Galindo. They told us that so far he had been unable to identify the man he had seen with McKinley. We showed him a mugshot of Girard, and he positively identified it. Kennedy went on to say that as far as he was concerned, there could be no mistake, and that as far as he knew, Girard was the last man seen with the victim before his death. McKinley's car had been found 2 blocks from the alley where we'd found the body. In the back of it, the officers found the remainder of the case of beer and the 2 bottles of bourbon. Leighton Prince went out and dusted the car. They came up with one good set of prints other than the victim's. When these were checked, it was found that they matched the file copies of Girard's fingerprints. 9:46 p.m. We drove out to the address listed in Girard's package. His landlady showed us to his room. It was evident that he hadn't been in it the night before. Frank and I waited for him to return. 10 p.m., 11, 11:30.
What are you doing here?
You Fred Girard?
Yeah, that's right. Who are you?
Police officers.
Oh, cops. What do you want with me?
You know a man named Arthur McKinley?
Why?
You know him?
Yeah, I know him. Anything wrong with that?
When'd you see him last?
Last night.
Where?
At his store. I came by about 6:15. We talked for a while, and then he closed the store. He said he had to get home for a birthday party, something like that. We went down the street to Kennedy's to get some beer, and then he went back to the store. I heisted a couple, and then I left.
What time was that?
Well, I guess about 8:30 or so. I had to meet a guy out in Santa Monica, so I left.
You left McKinley at his store?
Yeah, that's right. So what's this all about? What are you giving me problems for? I haven't done anything.
All right, take everything out of your pockets. Put it right down here.
Well, look, you got no right to barge in here. Tell me what to do. I'm clean.
Then you got no reason for not cooperating now, have you?
Well, I suppose not.
Then take everything out of your pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keys.
Your money in your wallet?
Yeah.
How much you got?
I don't know. I have to count it.
All right, count it.
Let's see. 5, 6, 7, 8 bucks. I don't know. 56, 7, 8, 9, 92 cents. And a Canadian penny.
Was there anybody with McKinley and you when you were drinking?
No, just went in the back of the store to have a beer, a little talk. We got along pretty good. He used to hire me once in a while, clean up a store, sweep out, things like that. Mm.
Yeah. Was he feeling all right when you left him?
I guess so. I didn't ask him, but he didn't say anything about it. Just said he had to get home for a party, that his wife would be hacked if he was late. Like I said, I left at 9:15. You might ask Stu Bennett. He might be able to tell you something.
Who's he?
Owns a little grocery just down the street from McKinley.
You say he might know about McKinley?
Yeah, he was there when I left. I was walking out when Mr. McKinley opened the door. Bennett was walking by. He said he had some things he wanted to talk to McKinley about.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left, Bennett went into the store. What's this all about, anyway? Something happened to McKinley?
He's been murdered.
Oh, no kidding. You're a nice guy. You figured I did it, huh?
That's the way it looked.
Yeah. Well, I did some time. I won't try to con you. You'll probably know all about it anyway. I wouldn't kill anybody, though. I'm going straight. I've been working every day since I got out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, though.
Yeah?
You might talk to Stu Bennett. He was with him when I left.
Fred Girard gave us a complete description of Stuart Bennett. We called the name into R&I, but he had no record. We checked Bennett's store and found a card on the front door that gave his home address. Frank and I drove out to his house. He lived in a new apartment development in the southwest section of town. Monday morning, 12:47 a.m., we rang the bell to his apartment.
He's probably asleep. Yeah. Want to try it again?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Like talk to you.
Just a minute.
Yeah? Police officers. I'm Frank Smith. This is my partner, Joe Friday.
How do you do? Want to come in?
Right.
Well, what is it you wanted to talk to me about?
You know a man named Arthur McKinley? Do you?
I knew you'd find out. I knew it. I knew it right after it happened. Knew it right away.
All right, you want to get dressed?
Yeah, all right. I came home last night after it happened. I thought about it. I thought and thought. I wanted to go and tell you about it. I knew that I'd done a terrible thing. Killed Arthur. Killed another human being. You got to understand one thing, Mr. Friday.
What's that?
It's important to me. I'm not a vicious man.
Why'd you kill him?
Well, I stopped last night to talk to him about all of us getting together as sort of a pool. Hiring Fred to sort of take care of all the stores. That's what I went to see him about. I thought it'd be nice to have someone to take care of the stores, you know, wash the windows, sweep up, and we'd all chip in and pay him. Sort of a pool, like I said.
Yeah.
We talked. Arthur wasn't too much in favor of the idea. Said he'd been thinking about giving Fred a regular job in the flower shop. Said things were real good with him. He thought he'd take on an assistant. Things were going real fine for him.
All right. You better get dressed. We'll go downtown.
After I killed him, I took him out of the store and put him in an alley.
Yeah?
Now, I wanted to come and tell you about it. I went down to City Hall. I walked up the stairs on Spring Street. You know the big ones?
Yeah.
I was going to give myself up. I wanted to tell you about it. And then when I got there, the doors were closed. The sign said to use a Main Street entrance. I sat down on the stairs. Sat there for a long time. I thought about telling somebody about what I'd done. And then I walked around by the police department on the walk. It goes around. I looked into the window and saw the detectives. I wanted to go right in and tell them about it.
All right, come on. Get your clothes on. Let's go.
Now, that should prove it to you.
What's that?
I'm not a vicious man.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On June 5th, trial was held in Department 97, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, remember now, Chesterfield is first to present this scientific evidence on the effects of smoking. A medical specialist is making regular bi-monthly examinations of a group of people from various walks of life. 45% of this group have smoked Chesterfields for an average of 10 years. He reports that he observed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfield. Either way you like them, regular or king size, you'll find premium quality Chesterfields much milder.
Stuart Carlisle Bennett was tried and found guilty of murder in the first degree. He is now serving his term in the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California. Murder in the first degree is punishable by death or by confinement in the state penitentiary for life. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Eddie Firestone, Carolyn Jones, Herb Vigran. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Sound off for Chesterfields. Either way you like them, regular or king size, you'll find premium quality Chesterfields much milder.
Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Tonight, more adventure with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, on NBC.
You heard Dragnet. The show was titled The Big Guilt, with an original air date of the 23rd of November, 1952. That starred Carolyn Jones, as I indicated before the show. She would go on to portray Morticia Adams and the Adams family on television. And this was kind of a carryover from last week, featuring Frank Burt, who wrote and created and wrote The Six Shooter, but he would go on in 1958 to work on the television series Dragnet. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. This show was previously recorded, as Frank Rossano will tell you here at the top of the hour. I will surprise you for the last minute that's remaining. Thanks for listening.